Welcome to the Doghouse.
Take two.
2017 edition.
Nothing like starting off with a screw up.
And we did.
You know what, though? It was transparent. Nobody will know that but us. But until you
Well, I brought the music down and then brought it back up, so probably be obvious. Yeah. Unless I fix that.
Yeah, I don't think our listeners pay that much attention.
No.
Right?
You know, from what I saw, only two people hated our new idea for a show.
Yeah, which means that thousands loved
and it. And five people liked it.
Well, that's even better.
So they lost.
Yeah, they lost.
Right? I wish the people that hated it had commented.
Well,
all the
one
years.
Didn't say.
Sorry,
one didn't say he hated it. He just said he preferred the others.
You know, I mean, the thing is motorcycle news just dies down this time of the year.
Yeah,
it does.
And you can't. And you can't.
And
you
we felt it was still rehashing.
It's too
top
late.
10.
It's
top
too
10.
Late to hate it now. We're no longer taking votes.
That's right. Voting's done.
This is
seven. Five to two.
You can vote with
seven people decided the fate of thousands.
Yeah, there
that's
you
great.
Go.
It's like California.
Well, the other thousands.
It's like those were our seven electorals.
We warned them that
electorates
that no response was a positive response, right?
Yeah.
So they were warned.
Silence was consent.
Silence is consent.
Yeah, absolutely. I should get that as a shirt.
Yeah. Sometimes no means yes.
Bill, you gotta take the gag out of their mouth before you can use that.
Said who? Said who?
Anyway,
how was your holidays?
Crappy. I was sick the whole time.
Mine was okay up till Christmas night. So I wasn't sick before Christmas night. So okay. I had a good time up in Philadelphia. I really enjoyed that.
Did you get mugged?
Did not get mugged. I didn't go anywhere where I would get mugged.
Next time you go to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm dying still.
Yeah.
Next time you go to Philadelphia, you should go over to the Simeon Museum. I think you'd like it. It's by the airport.
Is that has okay. to do with great apes?
No, the Simeon Museum is automobile racing history museum.
Oh,
a lot of cool. I posted
well,
some pictures.
You know, I've been up there three times this fall, and this is the first time you mention it.
It's the first time I thought about it. Okay. I went for a Toys for Tots charity drive in the beginning of December. Oh. I had never been before that.
Okay.
And now I say, if you happen to be in Philadelphia, you should actually.
And
get
it's
that
near
up.
The airport. You're saying
it's like literally, you walk out, you can see the airport.
Okay.
It's over there.
Where that is.
Yeah, it's over there in the, you know, and they have a guard at the parking lot and security and fence around it, so it's actually kind of almost safe for Philly.
They have a lot of those around the airport, actually.
Yeah,
guarded parking lots.
Yeah, so it's just
and with good cause.
Oh yeah, but
stuff falls off the truck all the time up there for some reason.
It's actually a really good museum. You know, you like automobile racing, you know, like. Mm-hmm. They have some cars that won like 24-hour Le Mans there.
Oh, cool.
They have the original Daytona. You know the Daytona Shelby Coupe?
Yep.
That was the first car inducted into the Antique American mm-hmm. Car Association. That's there.
Cool.
And some other cool cars, some race cars, some other just sports cars.
Yeah.
I think you'd like it.
I think that's what people don't realize. The Barber Museum, everybody thinks it's all motorcycles, but there were all kinds of cool cars.
Yeah, there were all kinds of cool cars there.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. But this is, okay, this is like that, but you can see the cars, right?
Well, no, you could see them. They're somewhere on the floor.
Yeah, but you can get close to these.
On the first floor. You could touch the ones that were
Oh,
there
yeah, the
Barber.
Cars at Barber. You're right.
Well, right.
I meant the bikes there.
Phil, but you did bring up.
They weren't as rare as the Modus, but they were there.
Oh, yeah. Nothing's as rare as the
Modus. Well, Phil did bring up off air several weeks ago, maybe even a month or now. At going up to the Motorcyclopedia.
Yeah, Motorcyclopedia Museum.
Right,
we should
yeah.
do that as a day trip.
Yeah, that's well,
it's a long day, but it's a day trip.
That's New York.
Yeah, Newburgh. It's only 5 hours from my house.
It's only 5 hours.
Long skinny pedal on the right, son.
Okay. Okay.
We could do that in a day trip. It'd be a long day.
It'd be a very long day.
Right, but that's better than just getting a hotel. You guys
well,
could
I
stay.
Don't know.
At,
I mean,
you guys could stay at the Walk the Plank.
How long does it take to see the museum?
Only a couple hours.
Okay. Yeah, then you could do it in a day.
You know, I mean, it's only a couple hours. It's actually only a couple open for a couple hours a day. I think it's only open like 4 hours.
We should
hours
do
a, day,
so. A show out in front of what used to be Orange County Choppers headquarters.
It's still there.
Yeah.
It's still there.
Well, we would totally have to Facebook Live there.
It's not theirs anymore.
The building's not, but
no.
They're still there.
We would okay. totally have to Facebook Live from there, right? I mean, that would be kind of fun.
It would be.
I don't think the building was ever theirs.
Yes, it was.
Was it?
They built it.
If they built it,
well,
no one will come.
They took out a massive loan they couldn't pay back.
Okay,
but,
huh?
But
well, that's important.
Built it because one of his kids built it. His
yeah.
son's is in Ironworks.
So, and then I read, and I, now I can't remember the name of the museum or where it was, but I saw somebody's pictures and a Facebook post from some other museum that when I Googled it, it was only like 4.5 hours away, like a car and bike race themed museum. And I was like, man, I should go to that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Or maybe we should day trip it. We could one day long day trip it out to the AMA Hall of Fame there.
Yeah.
That I would like to do.
You know, I mean, and honestly, and make our petition right there for why we should be in.
Yeah, you know, I've already sent it in once, and they never responded.
We should be doing follow-up.
I didn't want
to. I submitted last year at this time a piece of paper to put the log house in for an award from the AMA.
I didn't want to ruin it for you guys, but, you know, we might already be inducted into the AMA Hall of Fame under the broadcasting category.
That's awesome, right? I mean,
we might be.
That's just totally us.
It's in the room with the symbol of a man, you know, going to the urinal. Is that this room it's in?
It might be.
If that's where I have to put my picture, that's where it goes, right?
That's right.
At least you can say you're in it.
That's right.
I'm in the AMA Hall of Fame. Go into the men's room, second urinal on the right.
Just don't tap your foot. We should get out of here and go to break. Right? Isn't that what we're doing? Why are you shaking your head now?
Because we should be doing the first segment.
I thought we were doing the break.
We don't do an intro and a break. You run out of breaks.
I didn't get it.
Otherwise, you run out of breaks.
Well, watch this, right? We can stop that. I thought we were doing
a break. This whole new thing's got me confused too, Phil.
2017. I just talked to you about this afternoon, too.
Yeah, you said...
We'll do our little intro thing and then go right into the first subject. Well,
to me, that means take a break and go right into the first segment.
But you would run out if we did 3 10-minute segments.
I have extra breaks. We'll never run out of taking time off.
All right, well... Okay.
Right, we're only... All right, we're going to go... Then screw it. We're going to do a break.
Okay.
Right, yeah. Because I have no idea what's going on. Warren has no idea what's going on.
You would think...
I'm just along for the ride.
You would think coming up on episode 400, we'd have this down, wouldn't you?
You would, but...
Yeah, every time we get it going, you change it.
Yeah. No, everyone who listens knows...
With your big zipper-up shirt.
I didn't add any breaks.
You need a little bit of fake hair coming out of
it. We have no idea what's going on.
Out of the zipper. Right. Warren and I are confused.
I'll pull some real hair out. There you go.
Oh, hey.
Disgusting.
How do you pull hair up from below the belt line through your chest hair?
Because I don't know about you, but the hair on my chest doesn't start growing at my neck. Okay?
Oh, that's horrible. We'll be back. We're back. I have no idea what's going on. The computer just ghosted me.
Can we go back to 2016?
I think we need to. This is horrible. Yeah. This is... I have no idea how that even happened. Totally unprepared now.
That is weird.
Because I didn't even get to do anything during the break because normally you don't ever hear the break because it's just like this cut and it's gone and it's on to the next song.
But we take four minutes. You do get to hear it when we do them's the breaks.
Yeah.
Which we did last week.
Which I didn't do because, you know, I didn't even have time because the break music ended and the music started. So we're here now. I've been sick the last couple weeks, and I spent too much time on the internet. I admit that. I'm addicted.
You spend too much time on the internet anyway.
I'm addicted.
Ding. When you're perfectly well. Not that you were ever perfectly well.
I've never been perfectly well. I've always been addicted to the internet.
Uh-huh.
And I love reading what's going on and things, you know, like... Right? If you don't know what ding and ching and the ringings are, then you don't know anything about the internet.
Well, if you know Phil's middle name, which is Token.
For more reasons than one. Yeah. And I came across a bunch of articles in the last couple weeks, and I want to throw these guys out to get your guys' opinions. And the articles are saying that millennials, who I think will be the death of America, millennials don't want a president, they want a dictator for life.
And who's saying this, by the way? Just thought you'd get an idea.
A bunch of different articles. I'm sure they were all written by libertarian and left-wing conspiracy things.
Yeah, I mean,
free. Well, if we'd had a properly long break, I would have pulled up my list that I had of websites and stuff. But
see, I don't really believe that, because I have a millennial, and I have one that's a little older than the millennial, but she wants to be a millennial.
Wait a minute, when was she born?
One's 24.
That's a millennial.
And one's 30.
That's actually a millennial.
It's a 30 right. Millennial?
Yeah. Like the resurgent.com, the Washington Post had a thing about this not too long ago, the Daily Beast, MSN put a things about how, Harvard did a poll, and I mean, this is Harvard, but Harvard did a poll where it was like they gave people the choices of Hillary, Trump, Obama for life, mm-hmm. asteroid wiping out the planet. Mm-hmm. One person picked out of a random lottery from the country. And Obama for life had 39%.
That's mm-hmm. because it's all they know.
Well, that's what I was asking you guys.
No, that's not true.
No, for most millennials, he's been their only president.
No, that's absolutely not true. It can't possibly be true. If you're 30 years old or 24 years old even, he's only been president for 8 years. So how would they not, when they were teenagers?
For a lot of, I think what Warren's saying
George
is
Bush, for the ones that they would all know George Bush.
For the ones that,
No, because
of course they would.
The very older, the ones at the upper end might, but for the vast majority, he's really been the only one they paid attention.
What do you think? The vast majority of millennials were born after 2000?
Politically, yes.
That's pre-voting. They couldn't even vote, so who cares? Who cares what they think?
Yeah, but if you take his 21-year-old daughter, you go back 24, you go back, she's 16.
Yeah, when she was 16 years old, there was a different president.
I know that,
but she wasn't paying attention to it.
16-year-olds know that?
She wasn't voting.
I think so. I think so. You know why? Because they bitch about Republican presidents in school.
Well, they do. That is true.
Well, that is true.
So they would have been, George Bush got blamed on everything bad in the country when he was president.
Yeah. And my daughter and I had a lot of conversations about what she was being told in school.
Right, right. So they did know other presidents. I mean, I think you're thinking.
But my daughter is probably an exception to that rule.
I don't think so, Warren.
I don't think most parents talk to their kids about politics.
They may or may not. I'm just saying that in school they're getting indoctrinated. And
that part's true.
They would have heard about George W. Bush in high school. I guarantee they would have been in high school.
Well, the only reason they know him is because pretty much they're still
liberals
blaming
hated him. They're still blaming him.
They're still blaming him.
Well, they blamed everything on him. And that was right in the midst of the... At that time, when they were teenagers, would have been in the midst of the fact that, you know, it was an inside job, 9/11, right?
Right.
All that stuff was going on, right?
Well, I mean, that's why I think they're going to be the death of the country.
Right, but no, I don't know. I don't know. Because you know what happens? You get older and you realize that all the crap you were told is not true.
Yeah, but they're hitting 30 and they don't know that yet.
I see this because some of her friends, mm-hmm. and then what I hear, she talks to me about what her teachers at university is saying. Mm-hmm. They're getting hardcore indoctrinated. I don't think it's going to wear off as they get older, because I think the reality is going to set in unless there's another major.
I disagree. You know what the great equalizer is out there? Paying taxes. And having a mortgage.
Yeah, but they don't.
A lot do. You're right. Some don't. Some never will I'm telling you, the vast majority of kids, when they get out in the real world and they have to pay for a mortgage and they have to fill their vehicle with gas and they pay taxes and they realize that
Of their parents, the ones who enabled this...
Okay, why do you think it's a divided country? Because a certain percentage of them are always going to be handouts, right? And a certain percentage of them are going to realize...
They're a result of indoctrination.
Well, see, I kind of...
Well, they all get indoctrinated, but they don't all buy into it.
I kind of agree with Warren to a mm-hmm. point on some things like, okay, on Long Island, and I'm using Long Island as a barometer, not saying it's the case, right? Mm-hmm. But because it's been expensive on Long Island for longer, right? It's mm-hmm. been, you know, it's kind of ahead in that department, right? Right now, the average Long Islander lives with their parents until they're in their 30s, and usually through their first marriage, right? Because they can't, they're living in mom and dad's basement, they can't afford to move out. Mm-hmm. But what I see... is there's a lot of millennials, even in where I'm at, that are guys in their 20s and 30s still living at home. So they're not paying that mortgage. They
don't
have...
they're going to school.
Whether or not they're going to school, right? I mean, they're working jobs, but they're not working great jobs. They're not out there like, okay, I mean, I started my first business at 19.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, you know, I know you worked for a company, but you left away from home. You went out to Hawaii and other places that aren't real places.
I was out of the house at 18, never looked back.
Yeah, you know, and Warren, you joined the military, so obviously you were gone. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think I just don't see that being this generation. I'm really worried. Ken, you're old. You're not going to make it. I'm worried to not see a republic by the time I die.
I didn't just have a birthday. Somebody else did. Yay!
Yay! But I'm still, even with my birthday, I'm still only like 3/4 of your age.
Good point, though. You are 3/4 of my age.
I'm not even.
Wait, that should tell you something about how quickly you're heading downhill.
I know, but I'm not even 3/4 of your age.
But you're catching up.
You're catching up fast.
I'm catching up. I know, I'm just saying.
But and I also don't really think that you guys understand truly the level of indoctrination that these kids are getting at the high school and university level.
I've got a 32-year-old daughter. I know exactly what she went through in high school.
Well,
and college.
Let me put the difference between my older daughter and the younger daughter, what she was getting in high school, I'm not disregarding university,
what
she was getting in high school just in that short period of time, 9 years, it's changed dramatically. This is how much of a dummy I am. I would get there because I'm a history major.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my undergraduate degree is. I would take their history books they brought home, and I'd look through them because I'm interested in what they're being taught.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between my older daughter and my younger daughter's history book was so much that I went to the school to talk to the history teacher about it.
Did your two daughters go to high school in different systems, school systems?
Well, because they were military, yes.
That's what I'm saying. So it's not a fair comparison.
My older daughter went to 3 different high schools. My younger daughter went to 3 different high schools. So I've got to see a large swath of the education system across.
In different areas. I mean, Northern Virginia's communist.
Exactly.
Where else were you? Alabama, which is not communist.
Hillsborough, Missouri.
That doesn't sound communist.
It's not. It's way outside of St.
Louis.
I can
tell you that my 32-year-old daughter, her high school history books and things like that, that she had now.
I was okay with that.
Going back. Well, I wasn't. I'm just telling you, in comparison, I was. And not only that, and the subject matter, I thought they were always very, very, very left-wing even back then. In college, she went to George Mason, was even worse than that.
Oh, my daughter's going to George Mason now, and I agree.
Yeah. So, but.
And she's a psychology major.
Yeah, but I think.
There's no hope for your daughter.
I think that, kids that have responsible parents will do okay.
But the
kids that don't have responsible parents who aren't involved and don't know what's going on in their education, they're going to be Sanders supporters.
Here's how I judge the indoctrination level this year based on my younger daughters.
Mm-hmm.
And I can do it to some extent with my older daughter, but it fits more with my younger daughter because she's still in the system. She did not vote for Trump, and she did not vote for Hillary.
She went Johnson?
Stein.
Oh, that's even worse.
No, she did Johnson. The older daughter went Stein. So she went Johnson.
You don't want your daughter doing Johnson.
Oh, Ken, I want to smack you around.
You can punch him for that.
But because we had a couple of conversations about it, and I said, you understand that any vote for anyone other than Trump is a vote for Hillary. And she said, I understand that, but I can't vote for her. So at least she understands what was going on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But she also said that very few of her acquaintances at school even understood what was going on.
Because they don't get... I posted up on Facebook, and I know Warren saw it because he tagged his daughter in it, a thing about millennials in the workforce.
It's kind of a TED Talk type thing. It wasn't TED Talk, but it was similar.
Yeah, it was similar to that, right? And I can't remember who did it. It was actually a really good thing about how the millennials are getting to the job thing and they don't know how to face failure because in the job world you have failure, and in high school they weren't allowed to have failure.
That's right. No one's allowed to fail.
Right? And in college you weren't allowed to fail. I mean, I agreed 100% with everything that Vinio said until he blamed the corporations for not teaching them how to interact with people. He made points about how you take a... You know, he has meetings that he takes the phones and makes them leave the phones outside the meetings, right? Because even just having the phone on your desk shows that you're not as interested. I think millennials, when millennials are polled, and when you hear them talk, right, I have a lot of millennials because I still do things with car clubs and bike clubs, which are filled with younger people, mm-hmm. right? When you watch them talk politics, they don't care the day-to-day operations. They want somebody to come in and say, this is the way it's got to be. Let's do it that way. Right, they want a dictator. They want and I used to think I was the only one who thought that. Now there's all kinds of studies and other websites, some that I agree with politically and some that I don't, mm-hmm. that are saying, hey, these millennials don't want to have to deal with this voting, the politics
because
of it.
They don't teach civics, and
right?
They don't teach history, and they don't teach like anything that has to do with democracy and republic.
They don't show, like, they say communism and socialism's bad,
no,
but
they
then
don't.
They don't say say anything that China's communist.
They don't say that socialism is bad because that's a judgmental activity.
Okay, so let me give you guys a little bit of history because I'm older than either one of you and tell you.
By a lot.
Not a lot from
decades.
Warren, but not even a lot from you.
Decades.
So anyway, this conversation we're having is a conversation that could have been had in 1968, because that's what all the parents were saying about that generation, the Woodstock generation.
I was wondering if that was going to come up.
It was.
And look at what they did.
With the zinger. Obama came out of that generation.
Hillary came out of that generation.
No. Obama wasn't elected out of that generation. That is generations pre that. Okay. What parents were saying, I'm a boomer.
Yeah. That's the boomers were the ones that were in Woodstock era.
You're a hell of a quarterback for the Bengals.
You don't.
Well, yeah, that's true too.
That's neither here nor there. The point is, what I'm saying is that back in the late 60s, early 70s, that's what all the adults, the older folk like we are now, were saying about that generation.
And look what they did for us. They were right.
No, that generation turned out to be fine.
No.
I'm of that generation.
You're a small part.
You were right. They were bad.
Phil, you are.
I'm Phil.
Now, Warren, you're part of that generation.
I'm right on the cusp of
the two.
But
you are part of that generation.
I could be either one, Gen X or that.
But he's right in some ways because... I'm pointing to Warren. You can't see that, but I'm actually pointing to Warren because I think those your generation people, the extremists in that generation, mm-hmm. have pushed the gambit, and I think now it's a larger crowd. I mean, there's a lot of people.
They're the ones creating in the universities and in the schools.
Right, they're the millennials. Right, like the freaks of nature during your childhood, who you were like that long haired hippie
the
freak.
The hippies, right?
Right, the hippies.
They're the ones
right?
in.
You
in
went out and got a job
kids.
and did good things, or so, allegedly.
Well, a lot of people did, or there wouldn't be a
right.
workforce.
The hippies became college professors, and now they're teaching all these young people.
Some did.
Their hippie stuff.
Some did. Some went on to be terrorists. What they did to a bunch of different
right.
things.
Right, but then after terrorism, they became college students, professors again.
Go back and watch the history of the. Of the space program, and you'll find that a lot of them went on to become doctors and lawyers and
so is that true about the three women that and I'm bringing the music up because
yes,
we gotta go.
I know where you're going.
Is that true about the three women that helped the space program? The three black women with the movie.
It's true of at least one that I know that.
That's cool. I never even heard that. I saw that you said
the
space program.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
Well, there's a movie coming out that. No one probably ever see, but I will because it kind of looks interesting.
One woman that I know for a fact, she was like a brilliant mathematician. She could solve problems that nobody else could that in that group. But
cool.
But what I'm saying is a lot of the baby boomers did go on to do great things.
And other ones
actually.
Became hippies.
It happens
became
in every
professors.
Generation. That happens in every generation.
And by hippies, I mean professors. We'll be back in a short little while. Very short, probably.
Who
the hell knows?
All right, folks, welcome back. So, you know, over the years, the many years we've been doing this show, like forever it feels like, there's been little bits and pieces that have come out about each of us, but not much.
I don't think I like the way this is going.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, you will. I think you will. And I think a lot of people would like to know more about the background. And we all know more or less. I know more about Phil's background. I think he probably knows more about mine. We don't know a lot about Warren's, you know, other than, you know, don't ask, don't tell, let him get in the military. But,
right.
But other than that, that we don't know too much about that. But what I'd like to do, and you can say I'm totally copping out on this, and I don't really care.
You're copping out already. Okay. But all right, go ahead.
Okay. It sounds like it.
What I want to do is for the next three episodes, on each episode, starting with Phil this week, let people know a little bit about our background. Okay? And tell your story.
I was born a poor black man in the South.
You still are.
He's going to take the jerk script and read it.
Yeah. So I got to. You're putting me on the spot now.
No, it's not a spot at all. You know your history.
Well, it is a spot because now I have to figure out what I need to omit. Right?
Well,
I
mean, this
plausible deniability. Allegedly. I have to look back at statute of limitation laws.
You can stop yourself mid-sentence and say, oh, no, I shouldn't say that.
Right, okay.
I don't think anybody
So cares. My name is Phil. Ooh, I shouldn't go past that.
Hi, Phil. How are you?
People already know.
Yes. What about me? I was born and raised on Long Island.
Okay.
The East End, not Nassau County, not the city, right? So out in farmland and country bumpkin stuff.
East End is probably doesn't mean much to a lot of people in other places in the country. When you say East End of Long Island, you mean out near the Hamptons.
You know, when you say that geographically, people can place it.
Right.
But lifestyle, it's completely different.
Well, the East End of Long Island is a big area.
Yes. The East End of Long Island is a big area, and there's two forks out there. And I lived on the Northern Fork. The Southern Fork has the Hamptons, big multi-million-dollar beach homes, gorgeous beaches on the oceans, fancy restaurants, great clubs. And I grew up on the North Fork, which was farming country.
It's farming country, and it's on the Sound, right?
It's on the Long Island Sound. Right. There's a bay between the two forks.
Is this a dinner fork and a table fork?
Pretty much. It's about the difference, right? It is the difference. And it was when I grew up, it was a lot of potato farms. When I was real young, and then they started switching to horse farms. And then when I hit my 20s, when I started my first business, it kind of moved into vineyards and gentleman farmers. You know, like freaks, like hippies started doing things like organic farming and stuff, which is just a scam. If you ever really want to know the truth, email me. I'll tell you what a scam organic and GMO is.
Well, that might be a show. It might be. Well,
I just gave Ken a show idea.
No, for you.
Warren's like, for you. Next week, for you. We're going to do.
For you.
No, it can't
be. Well, you can talk about it because you've got, and as you finish telling your story here, you'll explain
here's how it works.
Why
Phil,
you know
tell
about
us about GMO and organic.
Well, you can explain why you know about
Well, that I mean, stuff. That's what I was just getting. So where I lived, right, well, it was a 20-minute ride to the Hamptons.
Mm-hmm.
When I was young, I didn't really go over there much. Like, my parents weren't Hamptons people. Mm-hmm. My friends and family weren't Hamptons people and stuff like that. And
Because they weren't the idle rich.
Well, you weren't the idle rich, but it was a lifestyle difference, too, right? And the Hamptons, you know, there's a joke out there. And I think I've said it on the show, but it's probably been a long time. In 1920, it took 8 hours to drive from Manhattan to Montauk, which is 120 miles by car. In 2000, it still took 8 hours, sometimes 10, right? You know, I mean, the traffic got worse. The amount of people over there, there's always traffic. Middle of winter when nobody's there, there's legions of people going out there to work on these big houses and these estates and build stuff, right? And then in the summertime, it's just the population of my home county goes from like 1.4 million people in the winter to 5.5 million people in the summer.
Wow.
Right?
Where do you stick them all?
Exactly, right? Well, in the west end of the county, it stays the same. It's current the whole year. It's out by me. All those 4 million people go to the Hamptons and out by me, out on the North Fork, right? So it's... But you get to live an interesting life there. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I grew up driving tractors, riding horses bareback in my neighbor's fields. You know, I mean, like, my neighbor had a horse farm.
There's so many jokes with that one.
Yeah, I set myself up. Yeah. My neighbor had a horse farm. You know, I worked on it from the time I was 8. I think I mowed lawns and mucked stalls and stuff like that. I walked horses, fed the horses, watered them. You know, I mean, that's what you did. And, you know, I had a big garden, you know, did some farming stuff. You know, and your days off, you'd ride your bike down, or not your days off, but when you were done, I could bike ride to the bay or the sound and go swimming at town beaches mm-hmm. or private little beaches that were there, you know? And it was at a time where, you know, when you were about 10, if there was a couple of you, nobody's parents cared if you went down as a group, right? You rode your bike down. It was my parents lived 2 miles from the water, right? It was an easy bike. I was a kid, so I could do that. I had energy and stuff, right?
And three lungs.
I had all my lungs at the time. And growing up, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to be when I was a kid, right? I really had no idea, but I was really good at math, and I loved problem solving. So I went to college for engineering, and I worked more than I had fun when I was a teenager, because I knew I wasn't getting any money from my folks to go to school. My dad had just paid to put mm-hmm. my sisters through college, and my mom went back to school, right? So it was, I mean, my dad sat me down at like 12 and said, you want to go to college, you better start working and saving up. So I worked most of the time in the summer times. I worked 2, sometimes 3 jobs as a kid, you know, from the time I was like 12 to entering college, which I look back and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah, it would have been cool to spend more time at the beach and stuff, but yeah, but you know, and I went to college, and I went my freshman year, and I came home and I worked the summer to save up money for the next year, and I got sick. I actually got the chicken pox at 20 years old in my sophomore year in college.
A lot more serious at that age.
Yeah, oh yeah, deadly serious, right? Like mm-hmm. I was in the hospital, I was home for, I mean, I missed the whole semester. And when I went to go back to school at that time, tuition went up 11%. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't have it, right? You know, I mean, it was wintertime. On Long Island, in the summertime, it's easy to make money. You can pick up a job, no problem. In the wintertime, not so much, right? All the expendable money's gone.
Yeah.
So I started working. Went back to some of my summer jobs and said, all right, well, I'll put it off going back. And that's when I started my first business, which was a produce business. I bought vegetables off of farm families that I'd known since I was born, right? Guys that went to school with my parents, my dad.
People, you know,
my
gave mom. Him corn cobs as a birthday gift.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, but my dad went to high school with a lot of guys who were farmers, and school with guys that were farmers, grew up playing with them and stuff. I knew their kids. I went to school with their kids. And I was working at this farm stand. And this rich guy, and you can Google him. I wouldn't say he was rich. This famous chef came in. His name was Starbucks. He actually has a really weird story. I think he was a tight end for Notre Dame when he was in college, right? And he was the first 5-star chef to have a restaurant in the Hamptons, right? It was the first 5-star restaurant. And he came into the farm stand I was working at, and he said to the lady on the farm stand, he said, can I buy my vegetables here for my restaurant? So he started that probably when I was in high school. I was working there part-time in high school, and I remember him coming in, and he was buying these vegetables. And she was like, yeah, okay. And that year, at the very end of that summer, the lady who owned the farm stand walked into me and the other guy that worked there, and she said, by the way, I'm closing. And we were like, yeah, it's full-time, right? You know, mm-hmm. She's like, no, this is it. At the end of this year, I'm done. Well, that was that guy's full-time job, right? He worked he had a greenhouse that he grew flowers that he sold to the farm stand. That was his whole job, was working there.
Right.
Right? So he's like, well, what are you going to do? And I'm like, well, I'm going to go to school. He's like, what are you going to do in the summertime next year? I said, I don't know. Right? So he found a farm and a farm stand, and him and I ran the farm. You know, I'd come home on weekends and help them out. And then when I came back from college in the summer, that second year, well, actually, by then it was my third year because I was, I guess it was second year, really, technically. So he was running this. He had this farm stand, so I ran the farm stand and ran the farm. You know, and we kind of partnered up and we did a bunch of stuff. You know, and the lady with the farm stand, the chef, I went over. You know, he was still floating around looking for people to buy, and he saw me and he saw Kenny, and he was like, that was my partner's name. He's like, you know, I'd still like to buy stuff, right? So it worked out for a couple weeks. He'd come over, and then he said, I'm too busy. Right? He's like, I don't want to do that. So I was like, all right, well, I'll deliver it, right? And I was saving money for college, so I said to him, hey, you know, I got to charge you $100 to drive it over, right? I was driving it 20 miles. But this was a restaurant right on the ocean, right? All kinds of celebrities ate there. They had the money. Right? So he's like, yeah, all right, no problem. I was like, oh, all right. So then he goes, would it make it better for you if I found you another restaurant to help out? So he contacted a guy that used to work for him that worked at a country club. Right? And that guy started doing it. So now I was making $200 a day taking vegetables over there. I was only making about $400 a week on the farm. Right? And I was like, oh, wait a second here. So I said to my partner, I said, I'm going to do that and just take that, and you can have everything from the farm. You don't have to worry about splitting with me. Or, you know.
You basically became a delivery business.
And I became a delivery business buying off the same people. You know, I mean, I wasn't really growing much. I had about a three-quarter of an acre garden that I'd grow stuff with. And then as it developed, I rented 6 acres that I grew herbs on, right? Oh, tarragon, thyme, sage, that kind of stuff, because it was cash money easy.
Sure,
it was time. You know, everybody always asked me to grow that, and I never did because there wasn't enough money in it for the risk, right? I was making so much money doing the... I sounded like I'm bragging, but I was making so much... I could go out and cut 300 bunches of herbs in an hour and a half in the morning with the way I had things set up, and I was getting $1.50 a bunch, and it was cash, and it was all my money. And I was only renting the 6 acres for $100 an acre a year, right? I mean, two days of cutting, and I had paid for the place for the year. So I did that, and I built a business. At one time, I had 26 restaurants, chefs, and you know, catering businesses, some small marketplaces, country clubs, bath and tennis clubs, and I was a hot commodity in the Hamptons, where everybody goes and wants to be a hot commodity. And being a hot commodity in the Hamptons, I went out, all those clubs that you see that people wait online and stuff, and you have to have this dress code, and they're $1,000 a table. I'd walk in and flip-flops, dirty shorts and a Hawaiian t-shirt, and they'd sit me in, and I didn't pay for a drink because, damn it, I was Phil, and I was local. And I had the best time. I mean, I talk about, on one of the previous shows, I talked about not watching television in the 90s and early 2000s. I literally didn't. I was never home. I was out all the time, but I busted my ass. I worked 4:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the morning, right? 24 hours a day, you know, and sometimes working was at the bar having happy hour with your customer or them seeing you. I remember the first time I went to a fancy restaurant, right? And I was a grilled cheese eater, right? I'd go to a diner and I'd get grilled cheese. No matter where I went, man, a grilled cheese or a cheeseburger. I never tried new food. And I walked in, and one of my chefs said, how come you've never been here for dinner? I just give him a dumb look.
Because like, you don't have cheeseburgers.
And I was like, well, I don't know. I was like, I didn't think, you know, that your purveyor should come in for dinner. Well, it's insulting that you don't. You should probably eat at all these places you deal with. So then I'm going, oh, my God, I can't afford to do that. Right? I was like, these places are... One place got $52 for a ham sandwich. Ugh. Right? I mean, another place was charging $13 for a half a guamki. That's a half a stuffed cabbage roll.
And this was back in the 90s.
This was in the 90s. Right? And I said, okay. So I went in, I called up my friends and I was like, look, I'm going to be broke for a couple weeks. So let's go out to dinner. I'm going to take you guys out to dinner, right? Because I didn't want to go alone because that looked even more retarded. So I called up a group of friends and we walked into this restaurant, and the maitre d' saw me and she knew I was the produce guy. And there was this big line going out the door, right, of people waiting for a table. And she came up, she's like, Phil. And I was like, yeah. She's like, how many? And I was like, 4. And she's like, go wait at the bar. It'll be about 10 minutes. And I just heard her telling the people in front of me it'd be 2 hours. And I was like, okay.
You're going, yeah, man.
So yeah, I'm like, whatever. I'm like, 2 hours, I'm going to be drunk standing at the bar. I go over to the bar. They're giving me drinks. My friend's drinks. We're drinking pretty good. 10 minutes later, we're sitting at a table on a patio over people watching in the Hamptons with people wondering who the hell we are that we got bypassed all the lines. It was the coolest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And I totally fell into that. Like, I didn't abuse it. I always tipped my waitresses more than they deserved, the bartenders more than they did, you know, not more than they deserved, but more than I needed to. But I enjoyed it. I had a great time, and I made enough money that I lived comfortably. Mm-hmm. And I traveled a lot, right? Wintertime came, on the plane, where am I going this weekend? Chicago to listen to blues singles. I love the blues. I used to hop on a plane and go to different cities. Wherever, this is pre-internet or beginning of the internet. I mean, well, I had AOL at my house in 93, right? I mean, you know, I had a cell phone in 93 that was like $4 a minute, and I'd go into New York City to watch Yankee games and be doing my business, placing my orders and getting my phone calls. And I remember people sitting next to me going, I don't know what the hell that guy does, but he probably went through $80 worth of cell phone bills because it was $1.40 a minute or whatever, and I talk half the game. But I'd get to sit there and watch the game, and I didn't care. I was making it, right? I thought I was rich. Compared to everybody I hung out with, I was probably by far the poorest person.
For your age, you were probably well-to-do.
Yeah, and I only worked 6 months a year.
Right. That's right? Nice.
You know, well, that's a lie. I did work a seventh month a year at a Christmas tree farm. I had worked there when I was in high school and college pulling trees, and then they asked me to run it, and I didn't work in December anyways, and it was fun. Right? People would come in, they'd give you a blackberry brandy, peppermint schnapps. You'd get all snockered, go out there, try and cut down a tree, tie it to their car, watch it fall off
the
going down
goes,
the road.
That's not a tree, that's a fence post.
It'd be like, shut up and sign your car. You're paying for it, right?
You can have the barbed wire for free.
snow fence. We use a lot of snow fence, right? But we, and I did that for many years. I did that until 9/11 screwed up my business. And I loved it. I wish I could still be doing it. It's changed. You know, when I was a kid, when I started my business, I always thought I'd have a problem getting money from the restaurants, right? And I did have one little problem. You hit somebody with a shovel in broad daylight in the middle of a town, nobody stops paying you, right? The moment you bang somebody in the head with a shovel, everybody else settles up. And I'm not even going, you know, the statute of limitations ran out on that, so too bad, people. But I loved it. I never thought the farms would dry up. And after 9/11... rich people came out to the Hamptons and they bought up these big chunks of land. So if something like 9/11 ever happened again, them and all their friends had a place to go. Mm-hmm. And farms started drying up and they started opening vineyards, you know, and the vegetables I was buying kind of grew up so that I was having a hard time supplying my restaurants. Right? And I just felt like it got to a point where I went from dealing with 26 farms when I started my business to being down to 6 my last year. And I just wasn't, you know, I just didn't feel good about the next year going in. So I kind of closed it down. I took a couple truck driving jobs. I was like truck driving, got to see the country. I owned my own trucking company for a little while. Started out good, but then gas prices went up and things kind of went in the tank. And that didn't work out too good for me.
That's where gas is supposed to go.
Yeah.
That was bad. I know. Yeah. That was really bad.
And then I started my magazine. I came down here to start a magazine, right? I worked for Full Throttle a little bit. I wrote some articles. I did freelancing stuff for a Full Throttle magazine up in New York. You know, because
Full Throttle is at one of those
free bike magazines. And I advertised in one of them because my trucking company, I moved cars and bikes around. You know, I mean, I've always been a gearhead. I've always had, you know, I don't want to say I've always had a car or bike because there were times where I didn't. You know, but I've always had something I tinkered around with and, you know, whether it was a car or a truck that I customized or a bike or, you know, or something, you know, I always tinkered around with everything. And I got into the, you know, I saw a need for a magazine down here. What I didn't realize is DC sucks, right? The community's not here. If you're a local listeners,
right.
Screw you. The community's not here.
Yeah.
It's just not.
Right.
It failed.
It's too transient of an area.
I lost $200,000 on that?
Is that right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I lost a ton.
Well, because everything's coming out of your pocket.
Everything was coming out of my pocket. I was printing a magazine.
People say it's a free magazine. It's only free for the person.
No, it was never free for me.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? I saw a guy
It's supposed to be paid by advertisers.
Right. And it was hard getting advertisers. Things were tight around here. I saw a guy, like, throw out a stack of them in his store one time, and I grabbed that dude by the throat. I was like, you ever throw my stuff out again, I'll kill you. That stuff cost me thousands.
Yeah.
Right? You know, and that's
literally true, and you're right.
Yeah, and that's when I met Ken.
Right.
The one you grabbed by the neck?
No, he wasn't.
I was the one throwing him out.
He was the one throwing him out. But Ken was smart enough not to do it when I was there.
I was actually always the one asking you to leave magazines.
You were.
Yeah.
That's when I met Ken, and I actually met Ken via another show. Right?
Well, no. You met me in the shop first, but you actually met me in the shop first. You came in with Anthony.
No.
Anthony was doing work for me. And you came in with Anthony. The first time I met you, you came in with Anthony.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But then I met you again after that with the other show.
Yeah, there was another racing radio show.
The first
shows.
Time I met you, you came in with Anthony.
All right, I thought I'd met you at just before
that. No,
because
I didn't know you when Anthony came in. I was like, who the hell is this?
And he's bringing him. All right.
I knew Anthony because he was doing web work for me.
Okay, yeah, so we had he had a web guy. The guy who was doing some web work for him, for Ken, was actually doing a lot of the design work in the magazine for me, right? Because I was always on the road and I didn't have time to do anything, right? So I'd put together stuff and send it to him and he put it all together. And it always helps to have somebody else's eye looking at things, mm-hmm. you know? And he did a good job. It just got to a point where I was struggling to find advertising and it just...
You were constantly struggling to
find right? I knew in the beginning...
It's kind of like the doghouse.
Yeah, it was kind of like the doghouse. And Ken was doing the show on JFK, right? The Doghouse was a radio show.
Right.
And you had guys that worked in your shop or guys you knew.
I did have some. Right? They were both people in the shop and people that I knew. Some weren't employees, but some were.
And I was on a show that was on, were we on before you or after you? After you, right? On JFK? Weren't you guys like 7 and we were 8?
No, I think you guys were...
We were first. We were 8, you guys were 9?
I think so. We were after you.
Yeah, so we were both on... So we would go in and out, and I'd see these guys, and the producer of the show at the time was the same guy, Veezy, Jason Veezy.
Right.
And you had like a week where guys had gone away.
There would have never been the Doghouse if it wasn't for the fact that I actually came in and did some stuff on that show that you were involved in.
Right, yeah.
And that's how I got to meet the producer. And I pitched him on the idea of doing the show.
Yeah.
A motorcycle show, because I thought this area really, really needs it.
Right. And I thought that was a good idea and stuff. And we bounced around. I did an article on the show when you were first coming out. And then later on, I think it was like Bike Week or something where a bunch of people had gone away. You were short and I came into the studio.
Right.
And that was the first time we were on the air together. And it was fun. Mm-hmm. And we kept in contact. I think I had stopped in a couple times. I'd called in a few times.
Yeah, I was going to say, you called in. I know you were on the show a number of times, but you showed up at my shop.
I showed up at the shop leaving magazines and talk.
And other times when you were out in the area.
Yeah, right. Because that's what I did. You know,
that's how I really got to know you.
Yeah.
Hiding from the police.
And then Ken said to me, you know, you'd switched, you'd went to AM, they moved you to AM.
Right.
And then I get this call from Ken and he's like, hey, listen, I'm thinking about taking the show to a podcast and being done with radio, right? And he's like, and I need people that will take that serious. You know, he's like, are you interested? Well, at first I thought he was asking me for like a list, right? Yeah. I was like, what a dick. He's like, are you interested? I was like, oh, then I felt good about myself. Mm. And then that's how this all came about, right?
Yeah.
And you know, now I actually, for the listeners, I actually, Thursday, 2 days from now, am buying a new business for me. I'm buying a mobile soda blasting business.
Because he loves Coke Zero.
Because I love Coke Zero. It's a great way
if you don't know what soda blasting it is. It isn't Phil taking a big sip of Coke Zero and spraying it on your vehicle.
Might be, though.
It might be.
You know, it all depends on if I like you or not. So I'm buying a mobile soda blasting business just to see how that goes. I don't work well for others. I've had, you know, I've left out my, I worked for other people. I'm not a...
People person.
I get frustrated working for other people.
Yeah.
Like, I just, and if I don't feel like I can change things to do what I think's right, I just get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty much me, man. I mean, I moved down to the area. I lived in D.C. for a long time, but I knew I needed to find where I wanted to live.
Well, and the other part of it is that you were kicking off the magazine, so you were already...
Right, and living in D.C. in an apartment actually for that worked well because I wasn't home a lot.
Right.
Right. So you had a place, but I didn't have to mow a lawn, and it was central.
Centrally located to where you were putting the magazines out.
Yeah, and it was centrally located. I didn't have to worry about a lawn. I didn't have to worry about, you know, what if I needed to go to Virginia Beach for 2 days or I needed to go to, you know, East Coast Sturgis for two or three days. I didn't have to take care of anything. And now I got a house out in Virginia, out in the mountains, which I like. I like living out there so far. You know, I bought that Soda Blast business to keep me out of trouble. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that'll turn into something. And one day I dream of the doghouse
actually making money.
Not costing us money.
Yeah, right.
I just dream of it. Like, if the doghouse broke even, I feel like I would have accomplished a lot. And I might I actually might eat a bullet that day.
Yeah, I was going to say, if that ever, I can't even imagine that happening because, I know we talked about this years and years ago, but I remember there was one point where we were well beyond $10,000 in the hole on the show early.
Oh, yeah.
It was pretty early on at that point even. Because, I mean, we started by buying equipment from the very, very beginning. And then
equipment, and software.
Right. And there was money paid to JFK, too. So, yeah. And to the Big Talker. So it was a significant amount of money.
Yeah. At one time, it was like...
It's not cheap.
No. And you know, I'd love for this to be my one true calling. Hire somebody to work for me to do the soda blasting, right?
Yeah.
And get out of and just be able to sit here behind a mic, or I even just like producing the shows.
You know?
I mean, I am an opinionated jerk, and being from Long Island, that's where I get my opinion.
I never noticed that. Did you notice that?
I can see a hint of it
every now and then.
All the time.
I see a hint of it all the time.
Yeah.
All right, that's enough bashing of me, I think.
Well, that was good.
I mean, that's my
good.
Story, and I'm sticking to it.
I was a little worried about you getting to the magazine, but you did. You wrapped it up good.
Yeah, well, the magazine was a short span, and it was an expensive span that I don't like talking about.
There's one part of your life that you left out that we always tease you about, and people on the air hear it, but I don't think they understand it. It's about your lungs.
Oh, yeah, well, you know... That was what, you know, I'm going to pause the music for.
Yeah, because we do tease you a lot about that, but right? It is a real actual issue.
All right, I'm going to pause the music for that, because that actually is a real issue. This I should have taken this from a sign from God, right? And I kind of brushed over this. I don't know why the music isn't going out. F this computer today. F, I don't even know who made it. Sylvania, of them all, right?
Sylvania? Oh, the monitor.
The monitor.
Okay.
When I was... When I first moved down here, right? I moved down here in the fall time, started setting up things, and said, June, I am going to kick my magazine out and stomp a mud hole in this area and walk it dry, right? I mean, I learned everything I thought I could have learned, right? Which, I mean, it's not rocket science. It takes money and it takes getting out and doing things, right? Mm-hmm. You got to go do things. And I said, man, I'm going to do this. So in the early spring, I went to some local car shows. I went to the Timonium Bike Show that year. I went to the International Motorcycle Show that year. I think there was still the show at Chantilly.
There was, because you were in our booth for a while in Chantilly.
Yeah.
And I actually saw you also at the International Motorcycle
Show. Yeah, right. So, and I mean, I went around and I did all these things. I got stuff for first articles and stuff. And I was going out to Ocean City. Right, I was going to go out to Ocean City, and I started feeling crappy. Right, I was going to go out to Ocean City cruising Ocean City, the car week out there. I was feeling crappy. And I didn't go. And my brother-in-law and sister, they were going away. They lived near me in D.C. and stuff. And they said, "Hey, when are you leaving?" And I said, "I'm feeling really crappy. I don't think I'm going to go." Right, I said, "I got some kind of head cold or something." And I went out that day to drive around. I came into Northern Virginia, my first time in Northern Virginia. It's the first time I remember driving down Route 7. How's that? Mm-hmm. Right? And I got out on Route 7, and I started having a panic attack. Like, I couldn't breathe. And I've never had a panic attack in my life. I've never had any kind of issues. And I hit I was getting ready to hit the OnStar button on the truck, and I saw a sign for an H that said hospital. So I drove into the hospital, right? I followed the signs. I mean, ran red lights. Don't care. I'm going to the hospital. I can't breathe. F you. Don't care. I get in there. I handed the lady my cell phone. I said, "Here's my sister's number," right? And this is just before they left, right? I said, "Sharon's my sister. Call her. Tell her where I am," right? I said, and I can't breathe, right? They took me in right away. I was sweating. I was red. I was hyperventilating. They calmed me down. They gave me a shot of something, right? They ran these tests. They take all these x-rays. They do all this stuff. They can't find nothing wrong with me. They're like, "Well, maybe you had a panic attack." And I'm like, I've never had one. My sister and brother-in-law show up, right? The doctor says, "Well, there's one thing. In your chest x-ray, there's a glob in your chest by your lung.
A glob.
Right? And I'm going, oh, my God, I have lung cancer. Right? I'm like, this is horrible. And I don't smoke the occasional cigar, right? I don't smoke. Right? I don't be around people that smoke. I don't like it. Right? And I said, oh, my God, lung cancer. He goes, oh, no, 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 it's not cancer. I said, well, how do you know? He goes, well, it's almost perfectly round. Cancer don't grow round. So, well, what grows round in your chest? He goes, I don't know. You should probably see an expert.
It's a tumor.
Right? He's like, you should probably see an expert. Well, thanks. Right? They sent me home. I decided not to go to Ocean City because of what happened. I didn't want to be driving out to an area I didn't really. I think I'd been to Ocean City Bike Week the year before, and that's the only time I'd ever been to Ocean City before that. And I was like, well, I don't want to go driving out to an area where I don't know nobody, blah, 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 blah. Well, by the time my brother-in-law and sister got back from their trip, I couldn't take two steps without being out of breath and almost passing out. I mean, I literally did just pass out. My brother-in-law shoves me in his truck. He drives me down to the hospital. Here, I had 99.9% blockage of my lungs from what they thought was pneumonia. Turns out I had a third lung. On the right side of my chest, I had two lungs, twin lungs growing back to back. And the one in the back went bad. And it damn near killed me. I mean, I could do a whole show on just my hospital, right. My ER visit, right? I mean, it was horrible. And they cut it out, and I was in the hospital. The week I was supposed to launch my magazine, I was unconscious in the ICU in a medically induced coma. So by the time I got out, everything I had, all the dates for the events listing and everything was old. I mean, my magazine started out 2 months behind and just a mess. I didn't see. I sent the stories to Anthony to put them into the pages and stuff. The first magazine I never even saw. Right? I didn't see until I got out of the hospital. My sister did the approval on the art, right? Because I was like, hey, just, you know, what if it doesn't look like a bag of ass, you know, go for it and stuff. And it was, you know, and it started out. I mean, I should have took that as a sign that the magazine wasn't going to go nowhere, right? I should have.
Bad karma thing.
Bad karma. Just bad start, right?
So now you just have one lung.
No, I have one and a half.
One and a half.
Well, two, but it's like one's really small.
One's a midget.
One's a midget. Little people. Little people lung.
You should put the picture up on Facebook so everyone can see it. Next ring.
I can show you my scars. I do have some cool scars on my back.
I've seen your scars.
So. Yeah, they're fun.
Yeah.
And trust me when I say it, when people ask you about your allergies, I can tell you some serious allergies you need to write down on your forms. You should probably email me for those. When we come back, who's going?
I think it's racing.
You got something to talk about racing? That's all on Ken when we come back.
All right, folks, just as a reminder, Supercross starts this weekend.
Yeah, next week we'll have a lot to talk about. You know,
Anaheim 1.
If you're like the big motorcycle guy going, where's all the motorcycle talk? We'll be talking about Anaheim 1. Supercross starts up.
Yeah, they got a new schedule with new venues. It's going to be pretty nice this year, I think.
Yeah, I'm a little annoyed that they don't have anything coming over our way.
Well, they haven't forever.
Yeah, but like they don't even have like Charlotte. I mean, they're the closest they come to here in the D.C. metro area is East Rutherford, New Jersey in April.
And Atlanta is sometime after that.
Yeah, Atlanta and maybe Indianapolis. I guess that's only, 7 hours?
Yeah, it's at least seven.
Yeah, I mean,
that's too far.
The closest one is East Rutherford at 250 miles, right?
Yeah, right. And that could be 12 hours.
It can be, yeah.
Right? That could be 12, yeah. 15, 20
hours. If I
had
to choose between driving to Rutherford or driving to Atlanta, I'd probably go to Atlanta.
Atlanta's still every bit of nine.
It is, yeah. But...
Yeah. Well... You know, if we went through Chattanooga, we could go to Bimbo's Truck Stop. I mean, it's a little out of the way, right? But, you know, you're going to Bimbo's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just no place close. We might as well go to Daytona. That's what I'm thinking. Daytona.
Daytona's nothing wrong
with that. I'll tell you what, Warren. If my soda blast does business, does good,
we'll go to Daytona.
We'll go to Daytona. Right. If it doesn't do good, you're paying for us to go to Daytona.
All right. Well, one of the things that caught my interest this week was I saw it on motorcycle.com that they have their 2016 Motorcycle Tech Product of the Year. And I saw this and I said, this needs to be in every motorcycle training course anywhere in the world. If you're going to learn how to ride a motorcycle, you need to use this piece of technology. And it's, I'm going to describe it first by saying, if you've ever driven a car in a skid car, where one of those vehicles you can spin around in circles, got the outriggers on it.
Yeah. There's a guy around here, Ken knows him too. He was on that same racing show we talked about in the last segment. He would come in as a guest there. He had one of those. Those are really cool where it lifts the back tires up and all of a sudden you're sliding.
Yeah, and it's got the outrigger so you can't roll the car.
Yeah.
Somebody, and I didn't research the who on this, but somebody has invented a skid car roll cage type activity for motorcycles to allow you to slide and skid the motorcycle all around, and you can take the bike down to 35 degrees off the ground, so you're getting way over before it stops you from crashing. It has outriggers just like the cars does, and I would love to be able to put my Harley up on this and then try to skid it, drift it, and just to see. So you're going to learn more about how to handle the bike
Without
actually wrecking and killing yourself or hurting yourself on the training course.
So my question is, so you put your own bike on it, right?
You can put your own bike, but I'm sure at a school you'd run a school.
Well, I mean, like, that's what I was thinking. Like, if the car is just a car, right? But I still think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I think it definitely needs to be in everyone, because that's the one thing that when people are going around turns and their rear end starts sliding a little bit, even if it's wet or leaves or something, I've seen more people freak out because their rear end slip a little bit, and it's not a big deal. But of course, I started riding when I was young, so I know how to handle that stuff.
And you probably started riding on dirt, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's the big thing. Like I know Ken, you started riding on dirt, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And that's where I started riding on was dirt, right? So I don't panic. I don't panic when
your rear end starts sliding.
When it slides a little, right? Because I mean, it was on
but
dirt.
But this thing not only allows you to do it with your rear end, it also allows you to do it the front end too.
So you can wash out.
You can wash out the front end and not throw your body all over the place.
I mean, I can see that being very useful for somebody who's learning how to ride for the first time. But I also think it would be cool as a training thing for
an advanced rider and racing.
The only thing I have against things like that is people tend to take for granted that
it's going catch you.
Well, and it's going to get you later on because you get used to the fact that
it saves you.
It saves you, and it becomes a crutch in a way.
Well, you know? I guess, you got a point there. Yeah. But I would love to try it. I mean, I would love to put it, especially because they're only big bikes, so like my Harley, the touring bike. I mean, I'm not sure how far over. I've rubbed the boards. I've rubbed the boards, aka the pegs.
Everybody
in turns.
Does. Everybody does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how much further I can go over because I always pull it back up. As soon as I hear the board starts dragging, I bring it back up.
Well, number one, it's dangerous to drag the boards.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not gonna discount that.
That's a great way to lose control, but I mean, everybody's done it.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean,
but
right.
you wouldn't want to take it down further when you start dragging the boards because then you increase the likelihood that you catch something, right?
Yeah.
And really bad things happen.
Yeah.
But I would love to be able to...
Like, if you were dragging the boards and you run into a pothole, you probably wouldn't be on the bike after that.
No. No. That's
or
for sure.
Pedestrian, right? You'd be like, woo.
Yeah, pedestrian, right?
Sorry.
Somebody else's foot that's
somebody
riding.
Somebody else's foot, an empty beer can that you just threw out when you took the turn the last time.
It is a cool concept, though.
I wish I could find... I went to motorcycle.com to look for... I could see a picture.
I wouldn't let you use it
just
for very long.
Search skid bike.
I think for brand new riders who have never ridden before, for initially, and then give them that, and then take that safety margin, take that away. So they
I agree with 100%.
Right. I don't think like you should do your whole class like that, right?
No, it shouldn't be on there for the whole class. It should be on there to teach you how to recover from slides. If your front end's starting to wash out, you know what it feels like. You know how to recover. If your rear end starts to get slide out from under you.
That's totally not what I expected it to look like.
It's also electronic because the instructor can hit a button and lean the bike over how far you want to go
over. Yeah, I mean, in the skid cars, I actually got to drive one and ride in one, right? Yeah.
Remote control?
You could totally have some fun.
Yeah.
In the skid car,
Let me flip this jerk off here.
In the skid car, you're driving, and the passenger is the instructor, and he has this almost like switch thing.
Yeah.
The nearest thing I could say is hitting switches with your hydraulics, right? It's a whole bunch of switches with the thing. It looks like an airplane thing board, right? And he just hits these switches, and, you know, he can hit a switch where the back kicks out, the front kicks out. I mean, so I'd imagine this has to be the same thing.
It does something similar. You know, he has a button. He can raise the front wheel off the ground a little bit to reduce the traction patch it's hitting. So he can make you feel like you're washing out the front end. He can raise the rear tire up off the ground a little bit so you feel like you're, you know. So it's all that way. It's really cool. The way you pitch it in the article is if the front end of the bike washes out, you do get the momentary feel of falling before skid bike's outriggers catch you. Yeah. So,
I mean, I've never seen anything like it. It's actually really cool looking.
The feel of falling is not like the outcome of falling.
No. The feel of falling is not the impact of falling.
Does somebody like come out and run up and like just cheese grade your arm or your leg, right? I mean, that's, you know, I mean, I always think you should test your limits. Like when I get in a new vehicle or something I've never driven or on a bike, first thing I do is I go to wherever I think the limit is. Right. Mm-hmm. If you tell me that thing will do 120 around the corner, I'd try for 120. Right? Because I want to know where I'm going to die at. Right?
It's right.
It's either going to be right there or I'll be okay driving or riding it.
Now, like I said, I think this is something that needs to be in every school. I think advanced riders should also get tried out every few years.
I think for somebody who's trying to work on their racecraft, that might actually be good.
Especially beginning racers. So they understand. And you can take it over more than 35 degrees for people like that. I think it's going to be a great product.
It's really cool looking. I hope we have a picture of it for the post.
It's on the post. You can have a picture of it. All right, folks, that's the end of today's show. We did get some motorcycle stuff in there for the few people who...
No matter how much Ken didn't want us to.
Yes, we snuck it in there.
No, that's actually really cool.
All right, well, stay tuned for next week's episode of The Doghouse on NTNRadio.com.